You're listening to Popstar Conversations, taking you inside with your favorite musical artists.
Chuck and I are sitting here with the one and only Boy George. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
This record, This Is What I Do, it's your first studio and your first band record in almost two decades.
Well, it's a studio record. So I suppose, you know, it's the kind of first band record for a while. You know, the first kind of live band. I think the last one was Cheapness and Beauty, really, the last band. And then there was You're Gonna Be Too Straight, but that was a kind of mixture of things I'd already recorded, you know. I mean, listen, you know, I'm not sure if it has been 18 years, but, you know, it sounded good. I was like, oh, whatever. You want to say that? Go with it.
So will you be continuing with dance music?
You know, for me, dance music is a kind of parallel universe. I still DJ all the time, all over the world. And, you know, for the past 25 years, it's been an incredible second career for me. So, you know, it's not something I'm going to give up. You know, I go back to London, I play on Saturday night in the UK. I'm off to Miami to play in 2 weeks. I've just come back from a six-week DJ tour of America. So, no, it's been an amazing, you know, second career for me. And I love it. You know, I think with dance music, you have to love it. And I also have another project called Retrophobia, which this week we went into the UK Buzz chart with a new dance thing that we've done. But that's not me singing. That's me producing, doing dance stuff. So I'm always doing other things and I'm always involved in dance. Like, I've got a track coming out with Roger Sanchez in a few weeks. I'm doing loads of interesting collaborations in the dance world because you can do both. You know, you know, a lot of dance stuff doesn't even cross over into kind of mainstream pop. I mean, you've got the extremes like David Guetta and the Calvin Harris's, but a lot of dance music you don't hear unless you go to clubs.
So do you think it's an interesting time for music now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting time for all music at the moment, I think. You know, obviously the music that's big in America is not what I play. You know, I don't play the big bombastic, you know, top 10 Beatport hits. So I was interested to go to America and discover that there is an appetite for real house music, you know, kind of, you know, almost the music that came from America in the first place and not this kind of European EDM that seems to have been, you know, seems to be very popular.
Tell me, what is the best club you ever worked in?
The best club in the world would be La Troya at Amnesia, which is Ibiza. We did the summer season at La Troya. It's 8,000 people. It's an amazing spectacular with, you know, kind of naked boys and transvestites and lots of flesh. It's like a big, huge carnival. Once a month we do it during the summer in Ibiza. And we've done it 2 years running. I'm not sure if we're going to be there next year, but it's definitely the best party. And if it's the first time you've ever been to a club, it is mind-blowing. Obviously, you know, for me it's not so much, but, you know, the Ibiza experience is unparalleled, I think, you know, because you've got the heat, you've got the, you know, the big clubs and the great sound systems. You know, it's a winning formula.
Do you see this record as a story of your life?
Well, I would say that it's not as autobiographical as people assume, but, you know, you know, music is, once you make a piece of music, you can't really dictate how it's kind of absorbed by other people. And, you know, it's always interesting to hear people's view on things, you know. People keep saying, oh, it's a very confessional album. And I'm like, I think it's probably the least confessional. I mean, maybe it's confession from a very different point of view, you know. I mean, I think I can feel myself kind of shrugging a lot on this album because I think I've reached a point in my life where I realize that I don't have all the answers. I think when you're younger, you really think you know it all and you think you've got it all worked out. And then you get older and you realize, number one, that you don't have it worked out. And number two, you don't need to have it worked out. So, you know, on songs like Nice and Slow, you know, I'm talking about relationships and I'm saying things like, there's nothing that I need to do, which again is very Buddhist. It's, you know, life is perfect as it is, and it's really the choices that you make are what dictate, you know, your happiness. you know, karma just means action. So your actions really are what dictate how your life's going to be, you know, to a certain degree. I mean, there's also obviously lots of things that you don't have control over, but, you know, you do have control, if you're lucky, over your kind of reactions to things and how you feel about things. You have a choice. And it's taken me a really long time to actually realize that. And I'm really glad that I have.
The first single, King of Everything, is that about you or someone else?
Yeah, but it's not me. I mean, well, you know what? It would be a little disingenuous of me to say it wasn't partly me, but it's partly you. It's partly everyone. You know, it's a guy singing to his wife. He's saying, you know, perhaps he's saying the things that I can't say, you know, or perhaps he's saying the things that I would find, if it was coming directly from me, maybe it would feel a bit crass. But if it's like a kind of character that I've created, he's this kind of boxer guy who's, you know, saying to his wife, you know, I'm sorry, I messed things up, you know, I saw you with that kid on the stairs and it kind of broke my heart. And, you know, so in that respect, it's someone else's story, but it's also everyone's story, you know. But I mean, you know, if it was about me, it would be called Queen of Everything.
And where did you get that line from the song about becoming the light and getting your sparkle back?
I mean, that was, do you know Patsy Kensit? Well, she appeared in this Weight Watchers advert in the UK last year. And actually, one of the things that she says, oh, I feel like I've got my sparkle back. And I just loved it. It just really touched me, you know. And I wrote it down, you know, because these days with the iPhone and technology, you don't ever have to lose anything. If you hear something or read something, you must make a note of it because it can turn into a song. And in fact, when I do that song live, it always gets a good cheer when I do that line. I'm just like Patsy, I've got my sparkle back, and everyone goes, "Way!" You know. But yeah, it's a fun song, and it's a song that's saying, you know, actually, you know, life is kind of beautiful and perfect, and there's nothing really that you need to do.
And I have to ask you, why are you referring to yourself as having a Teflon voice?
Well, I think that, you know, when I was younger, I used to lose my voice a lot, and I always used to have a lot of problems with my voice. But as I've got older, I've got tougher, and, you know, my voice has more experience, and I do look after my voice more now. I do a lot of vocal, you know, techniques, and, you know, I breathe properly, which I never did. Most pop singers don't breathe properly. So I learned to, a few years ago, I did some opera training and I learned to kind of breathe properly. Sometimes I forget, but generally I use a lot more breath when I sing, which has enabled me to be much more powerful. And in fact, sometimes live, I often sing better than I do on record. You know, a lot of people have said that the album sounds better live, but then I've kind of left room to do things with the songs live. You know, I've left a lot of room to, I think it's great to not to kind of completely obliterate a song, but you can kind of do stuff in the moment, you know, that's unexpected, and people kind of like that, you know, as long as you don't completely, you know, get rid of the melody or anything.
Since you've lost so much weight, do people still recognize you?
I don't get recognized anywhere. I mean, obviously, if I've got makeup on, then people recognize me, but also, you know, there's so much competition out there. There's so many people trying to get attention. I mean, you know, I think you have to have a lot more stamina these days if you really want to be noticed. You have to really, really set yourself on fire or something. You know, there's so many celebrities and so many wannabe stars that, you know, in a way, you know, and they're very dedicated. You know, if you look at someone like Gaga, she goes out of her way to be noticed. I mean, it's like, it must be hard work. I saw yesterday a picture of her, you know, reenacting Bianca Jagger in the 70s with the white horse. And you just think, my God, it must wear you out. I remember being like that. I remember back in the 80s, there was a period where, what would I call the pinnacle of my excess, where I was in my room working out, you know, what I could do next, you know, how many wigs I could put on my head, how much more makeup I could put on, you know. And it actually is quite tiring. You know, I think at some point Gaga's going to collapse into a pile of, you know, hair grips and be carted away to the nut house.
Who do you think are inspiring the teenagers of today?
No, I think for you know, for sort of 14, 15-year-olds, I think it's probably Lady Gaga that's the most kind of, you know, visually exciting thing that people are into right now. But for me, a lot of the most interesting stuff is the kind of rock bands like Alt-J and Haim and Deep Valley. I'm always more excited about the kind of guitar bands. This new band, the Orwells, I love them. Yeah, you know, I remember the first time I saw Suede on Top of the Pops, you know, I thought they were brilliant. And I think, you know, for me, it's always the kind of rock bands that kind of get me excited.
Including Lemmy from Motorhead.
Well, Lemmy's a, you know, a classic. I was telling a funny story because in the beginning, really early days of Culture Club, we were rehearsing in this place called Gnomus. It was a very famous kind of rehearsal place in the UK, in London. And it had long corridors and lots of different rooms. And I was rehearsing with Culture Club, and I'd gone out to the toilet. And I come running in with some, you know, piece of kind of mindless gossip. And I ran into this room, and it was actually Motorhead. They were rehearsing. And I kind of walked into the room with my dreadlocks and my, you know, whatever. And just stood there and went, oh. And they were like, wrong band. I went, yep. But they were very nice to me.
So how much weight have you actually lost, and how did you do it?
It's been a pretty long process. I mean, you know, when people talk about reinvention, you know, they make it sound so swift and that it happens overnight. It doesn't. But the main thing that I've done, the big change, is I went on this thing called the Metabolic Plan. And it's a German thing. And what it does is they basically do a blood test and they work out your hormonal reaction to food. But the main thing that you do is that you have 3 meals a day. You have 5-hour gaps between each meal. And between meals, you only drink water or fizzy water. You do not have coffee or tea. Coffee and tea is food. So you have coffee and tea with your meal. You don't drink it between your meals, because if you drink coffee and tea, your body goes into digestion mode and therefore it doesn't digest what you've already eaten. So you can actually eat very well, and it's obviously, you know, not biscuits, you know, not crisps. I mean, it's wheat free, it's a gluten free diet. I do have some grains, and I do have, you know, I have porridge in the morning sometimes. But it's, you know, we all know now that if you eat chips or you know, potato salad covered in mayonnaise, it's not going to make you skinny. So, you know, you have to kind of eat quite healthy stuff, and you can eat well, but the most important thing is to have the 5-hour gaps, because it's like a mini fast. And not only do you feel amazing, but it really helps you to focus. So yeah, so it's a German system called the Metabolic Plan. It's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, being someone that, you know, I did everything. I've done everything over the years. I've been on all sorts of regimes and, you know, exercise. I do exercise now as well, but this was life-changing, absolutely life-changing. And in fact, I've put about 30 of my friends on it, and it's been amazing, and it's quite quick.
I have to say, you've really reinvented yourself.
It was everything. You know, as I said before, you know, reinvention is not something that happens overnight, and you know, you learn stuff over a period of time, and if you're very lucky, you get older and wiser. But it has to be a choice. It's not something that just happens because you get older. You have to want to change. So for me, turning 50 sped the process up, you know, because it was a big milestone for me. It was like, I'm 50. Oh my god, I'm 50. How did this happen? And so that kind of sped it up a bit and made me a little bit more focused. But I started really, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, it's been a gradual process.
Do you still identify with the younger version of you?
Well, you know, there's something kind of cute about him. I mean, some of it makes me laugh. Some of it, you know, is kind of horrifying. And in some ways, he's like a mythical character. It's like a mythical creature. And I do laugh at some of the things that I used to say. I mean, and you know, some of it I think is fabulous. You know, I have kind of lots of different relationships with my past. But I've always been much more interested in now than the past. you know, the past is glorious. It's given me so many opportunities and I'm very grateful for it. But, you know, to live in the past, what a sad existence if that's what you were doing. You know, people often say to me, do you miss the 80s? And I'm like, I'd be really sad if I answered yes to that. I mean, I really don't, you know, because I didn't really know who I was then. You know, I have no clue who I was. So no, why would I miss that?
Getting back to this record, there seems to be a really strong reggae vibe.
Richie, who produced the album, is a kind of reggae head. You know, his father was a very, very respected avant-garde drummer called John Stevens. And he, at 16, played with a lot of reggae bands. He's a white guy, but he played with Lynton Kwesi Johnson. He's played with Horace Andy. You know, so he has a kind of real reggae kind of history. And when we originally decided to make this record together, we were going to make a reggae album. And then Richie said, you know what? I want it to have a kind of reggae-fied feel, but I don't want to restrict us. We shouldn't restrict ourselves. So we let it be what it wanted to be. We let the songs be what they wanted to be. We are now working on a completely dub version of this album. So we're going to be putting out a kind of... we're taking some of the tracks and we're kind of really dubbing them up. And then we're going to add a load of new tracks. And I'm pulling in some of my favourite people to kind of come and do guest appearances. I've spoken to Sinead. I'm after Nina Hagen. And then a few people like Hika Mouse, Lynton Kwesi Johnson, Lee Scratch Perry, George Clinton. There's a few. We've got quite a bizarre wish list. But it will end up kind of being almost like a new album, but it will be like the kind of the dub version of This Is What I Do. Maybe it's going to be called This Is What I Dub. I don't know. But, you know, I'm really excited about it. I've been writing songs for it. And, yeah, it's going to be great.
And what about the single Feel the Vibration? Was that more of an emotional or a political statement?
I think emotional more than political. I think, you know, I was watching a news report about Syria and Afghanistan. And, you know, you forget, you know, you got kind of people in the UK kind of screaming about gay marriage and, you know. And then you've got people in Syria who literally are fighting for their lives, you know, and it kind of puts things in perspective. You know, you just think, I just think, you know, when I was watching that stuff, I just thought, wow, they're so brave to know that, you know, you could be, to go out on the streets and protest, knowing that your own army could shoot you. That is kind of powerful. And also you kind of feel helpless and you think, well, what can I do? You know, what can I do except celebrate that kind of passion? So Feel the Vibration is really about celebrating that kind of bravery of people in those situations, you know. And I think that's what you do as a writer. You know, you kind of reflect things emotionally, you know. So I don't know if it's particularly political, you know, it's emotive. You know, when I did the track, I had this idea to use an Arabic singer and I wanted to find a particular type of voice. And I, you know, it took me a while to find someone. And when Nazir came to sing, it was like, this is so bizarre. When he came and sang, it was exactly what I heard. It was incredible. When he came in the studio and just started singing, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And sometimes that does happen. You know, when you put out an intention to do something and the universe kind of sends you someone that totally, totally lives up to your expectations. And, you know, it was just amazing to have him there. And he translated my lyrics and added some other words of his own. And I love it. That's a great track to play live. So vibrant. I mean, this album is so fun live.
I have to ask you a question before we wrap it up today. You had a photo exhibit in the UK. Is this a new professional career for you?
Well, it was my first kind of public thing, and it was in Liverpool, and there's talk about another sort of exhibition with the Walker Gallery, which is a slightly more highbrow gallery in Liverpool. Yeah, I mean, it's another thing that I do. I love it. I enjoy doing it. And I don't kind of put a cap on my kind of creativity. I don't stop myself doing things because, you know, I might be criticized. I mean, you know, that's been something that I've always dealt with. You know, when I started DJing, it's like, oh, you know, you're not a DJ. Well, I've been doing that for 25 years very successfully, and I love it. You know, and I'm a good DJ. I'm a really good DJ.
Boy George, again, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Boy George, it was great having you here.
Thank you again for listening to Popstar Conversations. Be sure to click the subscribe button below and hit the red bell so that you'll be notified of our next exclusive interview.
Thank you for listening to Popstar Conversations. Please join us again for another conversation with your favorite musical artist.